For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mark does the boring garbage that I don't really want to do, and I'm the talent, if you haven't picked up on that yet. That's the relationship here.
They're all thinking, you need better talent. Welcome back to Royals Weekly. I am your host, Marcus Mead, and joining me as always, a man the FBI once described as wholly obsessed with his own belly button, my brother Mike.
What I'm wholly obsessed with is solving cases. And, you know, if that takes me to weird places, it takes me to weird places. But I'm in it to win it, FBI.
Yeah. Was it you going against the FBI or were they out looking for you? I can't remember exactly how that situation went down.
Let me just say I was a vigilante on a mission.
You thought you were helping them? Yeah. It's one of those kind of things, I think. I forgot to put down what episode this is, so we're going to write that down really quick.
What is it, like a number?
Before we get too deep into this.
Is it a number that you write down?
Yeah, I number every one of our episodes. This is our 63rd episode, everyone.
No way.
Yeah. I would say we're close to 100, but we're not. We're close to 64. Yeah.
I had no clue you did that.
So that's huge, right? Yeah, on this week's episode, there's so much I do behind the scenes that you know nothing about that makes this podcast happen.
Mark does the boring garbage that I don't really want to do, and I'm the talent, if you haven't picked up on that yet. That's the relationship here.
They're all thinking, you need better talent. Anyway, on this week's episode, we'll reflect on a subpar week. Can we even call it that? It was worse than that, but I don't have like a ton of names for it.
Kind of depends on how the game ends today.
Not really. They got swept by the Tigers this week. So how much could it really depend on that?
Good point.
Right.
Good point.
And so we're gonna talk about that. We're gonna discuss the emergence of Drew Waters as a viable starter for the Royals, as a centerpiece in their outfield, and then we're gonna preview the final few games of the season because hey, there's three games left for the boys in blue, and then we're done. We're completely on to football season at that point. Mike, how are you feeling about the final week of baseball for the Royals?
Well, I feel like the guys really pulled together to rally for Mike Matheny's job here. If you need to know anything about how much they want to play for Mike Matheny, just watch this last week of baseball, ladies and gentlemen. I think some of those guys probably packing for him. You know,
don't forget this, Mike. Don't forget your affliction t-shirt, buddy. You're going to want this. You're going to need that in, you know, Arizona or wherever you're hanging out the next few years. Yeah, we'll see on that one. We'll start our week in review, as we always do, with roster news, but once again, there was not much roster news this week. The Royals did activate Taylor Clark from the 15-day injured list, so he gets to come back and pitch for the last 8 games or so. They optioned Jose Kwas down to AAA, a move that really just dug the knife in just for me a little bit. I didn't like that move. I understand it because it's all about inventory. Kwas has lots of options. They can send him down. It's not a big deal. Actually, they've already used his options this year, so it won't even cost them anything to send him back down, whereas sending other guys down like Luke Weaver and stuff may cost them an option or whatever. It's all about inventory, but Kwas has pitched well enough to stay in the major leagues. He's probably been there, what would you say, Mike, their third best reliever this year behind Barlow and Dylan Coleman?
Well, Taylor Clark had a really good run.
Taylor Clark
too.
Was good there for a little bit. He hasn't pitched in quite a while, but
I don't know.
Kwas has been among their better.
The best of that really bad, the third or fourth best of that really bad bullpen. Yes. As you know, I am a Jose Kwas truther. I don't necessarily believe in his long-term ability.
You mean hater. The word is hater.
I know you're a big Kwas fan. You're built the bandwagon. So I'll let you have this one. I'm sorry. It's been a rough week for you that he hasn't pitched.
Yeah, I know it has been. But anyway, the rough week was also for the Royals. It was a rough week for them. They went 1-4 this week. They're headed towards 1-5 with this Cleveland game. I haven't checked on the score in the last 20 minutes or so. But when
it was
7-5
right before we jumped on.
Okay,
in the
7-5 in the 8th. Okay. So they're probably headed to 1-5 for the week. Their overall record right now, as it stands right now, is 64-94, but it looks like they're headed to 64-95. A sweep at the hands of the Tigers this week saw the Royals slip to dead last in the AL Central, and they got some national media talking about the soon-to-be vacant managerial position in Kansas City. Mike, do you think Mike Matheny has a job when we record the next week's episode?
I do not expect him to be employed by the Kansas City Royals next week. He might have a job. I just don't expect it to be with the Kansas City Royals. Maybe he's going to
be selling Toyotas,
hawking Toyotas or life insurance. I'm not sure. But I don't expect him to be the manager of the Kansas City Royals next week when we record our podcast.
Speaking of recording the podcast, I do want to throw out an apology for my, there might be a little echo in here. I have officially moved into my house, and so there's nothing in the room that I'm in right now. Just like last week, there was nothing in my apartment, the room I was in my apartment. There's no background, but eventually we'll get all that stuff set up. It'll look good. It'll sound a little bit better. It might be a little echoey this week though. But other than that, let's move on to some baseball. We had some strong performers this week, despite the poor showing from the team as a whole. Mike, tell us about a pitcher who is maddening and that sometimes he comes out and pitches well like he did, and sometimes he looks like complete garbage.
Yeah, Chris Bubich was the reason for their lone win so far this week. He went five innings pitched. He had eight strikeouts. How about the strikeout numbers from Chris Bubich in that start? Nobody saw that coming. Only gave up one walk and no earned runs. And this is what makes him maybe so maddening, is that he can have a start like that, which makes you think that he can be a successful major league starter when he hasn't ever shown the ability to then repeat that. And that's the kind of rough stuff. And so I was debating between him and Zach Greinke, because Zach Greinke had a phenomenal start this week as well. He went seven innings and didn't give up any earned runs. But we talk a lot about Bubich, and I think that's more important with the, for the team moving forward, because who knows if Zach Greinke's going to be on this team next year or not. But Bubich, wow, how maddening. But trying to make his case to make the rotation next year, I guess.
We'll see. I mean, I follow Tom House on Twitter. If you don't know who Tom House is, he's like a world-renowned pitching coach. And he put out a tweet yesterday or today that was talked about consistency, the notion that like consistency is the hardest and most important thing for pitchers to learn. And that is the thing for Bubich. Can he consistently come out and perform? Can he consistently give them five innings? They're not asking for six or seven. They're asking for five from him, but not giving up a ton of walks, not giving up a ton of home runs and hits. We'll see on that moving forward. We'll see what a new pitching coach, a new pitching development regime does for him. Hopefully it does a lot. I'm still keeping an open mind about all of the starters moving forward, because we haven't seen them, I don't think, with top-notch pitching development and coaching. So we'll see what that looks like if they get it. My strong performer, I wanted to go with a hitter because, you know, you went with a pitcher. Don't want this to be all pitching. We got a lot of pitching for weak performances too. I went with Kyle Isbell because I've gotten to see him play this last week and I'm liking more what I'm seeing from him. He's a guy who I've been on the bandwagon for a lot, a guy who I feel like hasn't been treated right as a prospect, jerked around a lot, moved directly from high A to the majors only to like sit on the bench for 3 weeks and go down to AAA and then back to the majors. It's just been a lot of moving around and not playing a lot for Kyle Isbell in his professional career. And that's not how you develop somebody. And yet he's sort of persevered to some degree. He's playing excellent defense in center field and everywhere else they put him. He went 3-for-8 this week with a double, a walk, three strikeouts, and this kills me. Three caught stealings this week. He was caught stealing three times this
guy
week
only
with zero successful stolen bases.
He got on base four times. He got on base four times. Got caught stealing three. He
caught stealing Yikes. Three times. Come on, Kyle Isbell. What are you doing, man? Like, but anyway,
Kansas City, he's a guy bro, I'm hoping for more from.
Oh, that's perfect. That is perfect. He's a guy I'm hoping for more for moving forward. Like get some work with Alex Zumwalt and Drew Saylor, develop that bat. And he's a guy who at the very least could be a successful fourth outfielder, could be a pretty successful everyday center fielder in a Kauffman Stadium, which is so big. And he's such a good defender. I know there's more in there from him. I just hope that they haven't completely screwed him up with what they've done to him in development-wise, because the talent is there. I'm just hoping for more from him offensively. So it was good to see him have a good offensive week this week. That wasn't the case for the guy you're going to talk about next for our weak performers. Mike, tell us who was struggling at the plate this week.
Well, Michael Massey had a little bit of a rough week, going 3-for-16. He didn't have any walks. He had five strikeouts. He did have what you would consider kind of a rookie good week, where, you know, or a rookie bad week, where you go 3-for-16, but he did have a home run and a double in there. So, you know, his big thing too is going to be consistency, because we've seen the weeks where he goes off and he's, you know, hitting two home runs and he's taking some walks and he's driving the ball. But Massey, I think, will get more consistent as he gets more playing time in Major League Baseball. And for him, it's really going to be about, can you be basically an average to maybe slightly above average offensive performer? Because the defensive value is going to be there at second base.
Yeah, I wonder about him because he's a little bit more aggressive as a hitter than you would think a guy coming out of the Drew Saylor school of hitting would be. You know, he swings quite a bit. And Saylor's about, like, you know, swinging only pitches you can do damage on and stuff like that. And so we'll see if his approach even starts to develop just a little bit and he starts taking a few more pitches, he starts walking a little bit more. If he does, that really bodes well for him offensively. Now, he's good enough. He has a good enough hit tool right now to just be successful with what he's doing right now. You know, he's got a pretty good line for the entire season, but it will be interesting to see what steps he makes in the offseason, how he develops moving into next year as he gets more familiar with major league pitching and that sort of thing. I'm bringing up another pitcher for my weak performer, and he went out today and laid a big old egg, which was bad because I think some people have some high hopes for him. That's Max Castillo. He went out, pitched through five innings today. These are just his today numbers. I think he had another brief outing earlier this week. But five innings pitched today, seven earned runs, two walks, five strikeouts, two home runs. The five strikeouts is good, but, you know, gave up way too many hits, walked a couple guys, and then, of course, the two home runs are going to hurt you every time. Castillo, a guy who going to have to keep, still young, going to have to keep refining, going to have to keep improving some of his pitches, some of his secondaries especially. I think if he does that, maybe he has a chance to hook on the back end of this rotation. Him and John Heasley could maybe make a decent 4-5 combo. But you'd like to see more from him as we wrap up the year. I think he might. No, I think he's done. I think this was his last start of the year. And so hopefully he can work on some stuff this offseason and bounce back, show us something in spring training, and maybe he ends up making the rotation next year.
Yeah, I think we're seeing why Toronto had him in the bullpen. You know, every once in a while it gives you a start where you're like, oh, I can squint and see this guy as a real solid rotation piece. But then you get these and you're like, I'm not sure. I think it does boil down to what you said. He needs to improve on some of those secondary pitches, make them stronger pitches, make them out pitches. You know, he's got the good changeup, but, you know, I don't know that that by itself is going to be good enough to carry him. He needs to improve the breaking ball, and he needs to be consistent with the fastball in that it needs to be able to be located where he wants to put it, because he's not a burner from the right side. So he's going to have to improve a little bit on some of that stuff if he wants to be a rotation guy. The Royals, and maybe this is the good part about that acquisition, is he has shown that he can be productive in the bullpen as well. So that's, if that's an option, if you feel like, oh, he's just not going to make it in the rotation, then you can always shuffle him back to the bullpen and you still got value out of that trade.
And he's the type of guy you value more as a swing man than somebody like a Carlos Hernandez or something like that, where you're really never sure what you're going to get. Castillo, you're a little more sure of what you're going to get than you are a guy like Hernandez. And so I'd be much more comfortable if Castillo ended up in some sort of swing role in the bullpen or something like that than I am with a guy like Carlos Hernandez. This week, I think, was an interesting week because the Royals had played well there for a little bit, and then they came into this week and they get swept by the Tigers. That puts them in last place in the AL Central. It just reminds us that there's still a long way to go for this team. You know, there are still a lot of holes in the roster that need to be filled. In the starting rotation, certainly. In the bullpen, certainly. In the lineup, there's at least a lot of progress to be made. We may not want to fill holes, but we need guys like Michael Massey to take a step forward, Bobby Witt Jr. to take a step forward, you know, Kyle Isbell to take a step forward, MJ Melendez to take a step forward. All these guys need to progress next year. That doesn't mean they won't. It just means you got to see it in order to have any hope that this team will get somewhere near 500. It's going to have to be lots of steps forward from the lineup and filling some holes in the rotation in the bullpen, because the guys just aren't there right now. This roster is not 500 worthy at this moment, I don't think, especially on the pitching side. And so we're just reminded again this week that the roster is not good enough, let alone the coaching and the developing, all that sort of stuff. We need to bring some guys in to sort of start pushing this team in the right direction.
Yeah, and that's where my theme kind of comes in, I guess, is who's going to be that person. My theme this week is play every game like it's your last, and one of them will be. And that's kind of one of the critiques of a Mike Matheny managerial style, is that he tries to win every single game no matter what. You're down 10, we're going to win this game, you know? And I think it's hard to do that. It can be a detriment to a young team, especially because if you're teaching them that, you're not teaching them to play 162 game season. You're not teaching them to play the long game rather than, oh, let's cut off our nose to spite our face. You know, like let's, I don't know. It's a weird thing to me that anybody would approach a Major League Baseball season like that. And I'm all for winning. And, you know, I think it's very different in other sports. I think in football, you approach it like that because you play one game a week and there's only 17 of them in the NFL or less as you go down. You cannot play baseball that way or else you're going to burn guys out. You're not only going to burn them out hearing you constantly pushing that, but you're also going to burn out pitchers. You're going to, you know, you're going to burn out a bullpen. You're going to wear out the guys that are playing every single day. And so I'm ready for that fresh approach of a guy who's treating it like it, you know, this, I don't know why this reminds me of that. It reminds me of like those youth coaches that really like push winning, you know, it's like, dude, you don't have to be a rah-rah guy in Major League Baseball. Like, these guys are professionals. They know what they're doing. They're out there to compete. That's why they're at this level, because they were more competitive than everybody else. They want to win. You know that. It's your job to pull them back and say, hey, we're not going to win this one. We're down 15. We're going to throw somebody in there that's not a pitcher, or we're going to pull some guys out to get them rest. Or, hey, you know, we're going into a day game after a night game. We have to think about the next week of games as well. And so I'm ready for that approach rather than the, hey, let's try and win every game approach, turn on the metal music. Yeah.
Well, I don't know that it's wrong for a player to have that approach. It's definitely wrong for a manager.
That's what I'm saying.
To have that approach.
Players, like, and they do. That's the thing. Players do have that approach.
Yeah. It's really, really, really important that you subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on whatever platform you use. Subscribing, rating, and reviewing helps more people find the show and lets us know that we're doing something right and you want us to produce more content. Plus, Mike relies on these subscriber numbers to earn street cred with middle schoolers, like a high school teacher who raps about the periodic table of elements. It's free. It takes about half a second. Help Mike out. He needs the help. Look at how lame he is. They don't respect him right now. He needs the cred. Anyway.
Yo.
Go ahead. Take the short amount of time it takes. It does us a world of good. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We post a lot of additional content on there. Once I get settled and all this moving, I'll get back to posting a ton of stuff on Twitter. You get to read all this free content. It's a lot of fun to talk to us and that sort of thing. So follow us, subscribe, rate, and review. One of the exciting developments of the back half of the 2022 season has been the development of Drew Waters, a talented but underperforming outfielder in the Braves system. The Royals hitting development team has unlocked a much more patient approach, and he continues to progress, walking at a much higher rate than previous seasons and hitting with tremendous power. Since joining the major league team, the Royals, he's hitting .250 with a .341 on base and a .500 slugging, which is good enough for a .135 weighted runs created plus, meaning he's 35% above league average offensively. He plays an excellent outfield as well, which is good. So I'd like to take this spotlight segment to focus a little on the emergence of Waters, what it could mean moving forward for him and the team as a whole. First off, Mike, what do you see as the key to Waters' continued success?
Well, before I jump into that, I want to kind of give a little background to listeners who may not know the Drew Waters thing. So when Waters first came up with the Braves, he was a top 50 prospect in all of baseball after a phenomenal first year in professional baseball in single A, I think. Well, then the Braves did something very Royals-esque with the whole COVID situation. They basically skipped him to AAA immediately. And he struggled, surprisingly, unsurprising to anybody who knows anything about baseball. Going from single A to AAA is hard. And so he really struggled just flailing up there at the plate. Then they sent him back to AAA. And he kept struggling again, and then that's when we were able to get him. And so I think, first off, that's extremely astute by the Royals front office to recognize the talent is there, that there may have been an issue in his development. But I think the thing that they've done the best and the thing that will sustain him for future success is that approach at the plate and his ability to continue to play center field at an effective level. If they can keep it so that he's not swinging so much and not striking out so much, then we're going to see the Drew Waters that everybody thought that baseball would see as possibly a superstar in this league.
Yeah, it's a strikeout rate that everybody points to. And oddly, It was in like the high 20s, low 30s in AAA when he was with Omaha and the Storm Chasers. It stayed right there. Whereas somebody like Nick Prado had his in like 28, 29, and it went up when he went into the major leagues. Drew Waters has really hasn't gone up that much. It's roughly, it's 30% right now. And he continues to hit with lots of power and take walks and that sort of thing. And so the continued work on the strikeout rate, the continued work laying off pitches in the shadow, especially early in counts, laying off pitches outside the strike zone, understanding how pitchers will throw him, is what's going to sort of take him to that next level, that potential superstar level, or at the very least, highly productive level. I don't know that with a strikeout rate in the high 20s, he can ever really be like Aaron Judge or anything like that. You know, I think it might just be like, think Alex Gordon in terms of the height of his potential. Like if you're a 5-6 war player, you're really, really good. Are you a MVP candidate? No, but you're really, really good, and really, really good every year for a lot of years is very valuable, especially for a team like the Royals that could use some really, really good hitters. That's a good question that sort of begs the question. What do you think his ultimate ceiling is? Like, do you think that he can be, you know, a Lorenzo Cain-like guy, something above that, something below that?
I like the Lorenzo Cain thing. I hadn't really thought about that. I think as, you know, in Lorenzo Cain's best years, he was an all-star. I think that that's like what you're hoping for Drew Waters. In his best years, I would hope he could be an all-star. And if he can sustain that for a long stretch of time, remember, he's still very young. Then you're talking about somebody who for 6 or 7 years is on that border of being an all-star. That's fantastic. You know, and I think one of the reasons that you don't see his strikeout numbers go up quite as much as you do a guy like Prado, he's a switch hitter. So pitchers are always going to have to be a little bit more careful against him in that maybe their stuff doesn't align to striking out a righty as much as a lefty. And or you see what I'm saying? So he's never going to have that matchup problem where it's like, well, I'm a righty going against a righty, so I know I can throw this slider down and away, or I'm a lefty going against a lefty, I know I have this one pitch that dominates lefties. He's never going to have that problem because he's a switch hitter. So that could be one reason why.
It is weird to think like he will never see a breaking pitch breaking away from him. It won't happen, right? Because he's a switch hitter. You know, when a righty's up, he's hitting left-handed. When a lefty's up, he's hitting right-handed. So he only has to worry about stuff breaking down and into him, except for maybe change-ups if somebody's got a really, really good one, you know? Yeah. That's really interesting to think. I think he's that for ceiling in terms of, if we're thinking in terms of numbers, I think of it in terms of he's an 850 to 900 OPS guy. To me, that's his ceiling. You know, I don't think the strikeout rate will ever get into the low 20s, but if he gets into the mid 20s and stays there, I think he's 850 to 900 because he's got so much pop in his bat. He can hit the ball out of the ballpark or in the gaps pretty effectively. And then he can run a little bit too. That'll always add to those power numbers. And really, the transformative thing for him has been the walk rate. He got to AAA Omaha and essentially doubled his walk rate from like 8 to like 16. And if he keeps sustaining something like that, I mean, you're looking at him right now, his on base is almost 100. It's 91 points higher than his batting average. That's huge. That is huge. He doesn't have to have a crazy hit tool. He doesn't have to get a whole bunch of hits if he's getting walks and taking all these walks, forcing guys into his power hitting zones. He can hit 250 and be totally fine. And that's what we have to assume is a base for him if he can continue to hit the ball as hard as he does and all that sort of thing.
And he's one guy we haven't really talked about possibly taking that leadoff role for the team. But if he is walking at that rate, he is a switch hitter. He can run. It might be at least something to think about, you know, moving forward. Now, I wouldn't want it to start the year next year. I want to see some more sustained success from him. But, you know, if he turns into one of your most productive offensive players, you got to get him up there somewhere.
His emergence, I think, has implications or cascading effects for the rest of the outfield. Because it's weird. Without him, you kind of look at the outfield and you're like, it's filled with uncertainty, you know? What do you think his emergence means for the outfield moving forward?
Well, even with him, as of now, it's still uncertainty because he hasn't done it for long enough. But I think if you feel like you've cemented that, I mean, it's such a huge thing because he can play center field and a solid center field. You know, it's not like he can play center field, but he's not very good at it. No, he's pretty good at it. So you've got a guy here who's a switch hitter who can play center field, who can run. Now, really, the question becomes now you have all these other guys that are trying to battle for two corner outfield spots. For some of those guys, that'll fit. But for Kyle Isbell, his defensive value plays in center field. So what do you do there? Is he become your fourth outfielder who can play center field? You know, you've got Olivares, you've got Melendez, you've got Prado, who's played some outfield. You've got, who knows, not Ryan O'Hearn. Hopefully he's not here anymore. Hunter Dozier, who, if he needs a spot, you probably still play him at first or right field. And so, yeah, there's so many questions still to be answered. But if that's your answer in center field, boy, that's a big one. That's one checked off the list. You're like, okay, at least we've got that taken care of. Of course, then the question also is, what do you do with Michael A. Taylor next year?
You trade him.
We've said trade him in the offseason, but who knows? You know, you're hoping this front office is more transactional, but there is no guarantee. So, good question there.
You already have a Michael A. Taylor on the roster, and his name's Kyle Isbell, and he's way cheaper. So trade him. It's a very simple solution there, right? Like, and so I actually think it makes a ton of sense to start thinking of this outfield as Drew Waters as your everyday starting center fielder, at least to start 2023. Melendez as your left fielder. Olivares as your right fielder. And then when you want to get a better defensive lineup in there, you put Kyle Isbell in center. You move Drew Waters to one of the corners. Maybe on the days that Salvi's going to DH and Melendez is going to catch, you move Waters to left field or to right field. You know, there's a lot you can do moving it around, but a starting outfield of Melendez in left, Waters in center, and Olivares in right is probably your best hitting outfield. And
is that outfield pretty bad on the corners defensively?
It's going to hurt you a little defensively. Melendez should spend all of this offseason just getting better in the outfield. That's what he needs to spend this offseason doing. And so should Olivares, honestly. But, you know, it's going to be weak defensively to some degree. But offensively, there's no doubt that Olivares gives you the better chance in as a hitter in right. Waters looks like he's emerging in center. Melendez needs to take some step forward, but he's got a lot of potential as a hitter in left. That's your best offensive outfield. Offense is more important than defense. That's how I say you do it. If you get the lead in the seventh, go ahead and bring Isbell in center. But to start off, I think they need to be thinking about that in terms of their outfield alignment.
That's probably what I would go with as well. Boy, that hurts a little bit defensively. You might be able to do some stuff. I'm trying to think of another defensive outfielder, corner outfielder for them. Is there anybody I'm missing?
No. Well, Nate Eaton can play defensively out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But
okay, so that's a tough one. So maybe Eaton's like your utility guy, one of your utility guys. And
I think Eaton is going to start at third base for them.
Really?
Oh, where? Who?
Wow. I think Nate Eaton's
going to start Hunter Dozier at third base. Come on. Let's get realistic.
They just haven't played him there much, you know? So I would think they would be playing him there more if that was the plan.
I think that might be the plan.
It's the manager. They're going to be a completely different
exactly.
manager.
Exactly. So that's what's going on in my mind anyway right now, is that Eaton will be mostly at third. Of course, he can play the outfield as well. No qualms with that. But, you know, I'm thinking mostly as Melendez, Waters, Isbell.
Well, okay, so you think Bobby doesn't play third. You think Bobby plays short.
At least to start the year. Maybe if Mikel Garcia is ready. Yeah. I think if Mikel Garcia is ready come midway through the year, they might try, depending on different things, to promote Garcia to short and move Bobby Witt Jr. to third. But it just sort of depends on how everybody's doing.
Yeah. That makes it tough for Nate Eaton.
Not if he keeps hitting.
to see time, you know. That's true. If he keeps hitting, they'll find a place for him. We'll see what happens. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Now I'm all like geeked up. Like, how do we get Nate Eaton on the field? Because I like watching him play. I want to see him on the field. That's going to be interesting. Maybe they move a guy or two this offseason for a pitching as well. That's always a possibility. So we'll see.
Only three games left for the boys in blue this year, and they're against the team that they're currently facing. Mike, we already know about the Guardians, but tell us what the pitching matchups are going to be. Tell us what we're going to see in this final three games of the 2022 season.
Final three games, I'm excited about them because of the pitching matchups. Three guys that I really want to see. Zach Greinke and what could be his final start for the Kansas City Royals against Tristan McKenzie will be the first matchup. Tristan McKenzie's had a really good year with a 2.99 ERA. He's got a whip under one. He's been one of the main reasons why the Guardians are going to win this division. He doesn't throw super hard, 93-mile-per-hour fastball, but this is kind of Cleveland's thing. Not super hard throwing, but still effective fastballs.
Oh, to be clear, the Guardians have won this division. Mathematically, they have won this division. Yeah.
Oh, they already did? I wasn't sure if that had happened yet. Okay, good for them. they deserve it because they're doing things like taking guys like Tristan McKenzie and turning him into quality starters. That's what they do. And so he's got curveball slider as well, throws his fastball more than 50% of the time at 93 miles an hour. and it's still very effective. That's what Cleveland does, ladies and gentlemen. The second game I'm also very excited about because Lynch had what was a strong start last week. So it'll be Daniel Lynch against Cal Quantrill. Quantrill. 27-year-old right-handed pitcher. 3.42 ERA, a 1.22 whip. 94 miles per hour on the fastball. With most, those are mostly sinkers. Throws a cutter, a changeup, a curveball as well. Throws the fastball or cutter roughly 85% of the time. So we've got to be ready to hit the sinker cutter combination. I love that combination, by the way.
That's a great combo.
Isn't it? Gosh, that's really good. Both hard pitches and break in two different directions. So really excited about that. And then the last one, my boy, John Heasley, going against Zach Plesac. A 27-year-old right-hander, 4.34. He's having a little bit of a rough year for him. He's had better years. 1.33 whip. Fastball at 92, slider, changeup, curveball. The opponents really struggle with his slider, but he throws his fastball about 43% of the time. John Heasley, not so great in his last start, but pretty good two starts ago. Again, another guy that needs consistency to be in this rotation. So, as always, I'm pulling for you, Heasley. Don't let me down, brother.
We'll end this week's episode like we end every episode with our Just a Bit Outside segment, where we talk about something that's interesting to us outside the world of baseball. Mike, you are basically the world's most interesting person if we listen to the intros that I write. Tell us a little bit of something about what you're finding interesting. Right now on the rundown, it says the exact same thing that you found interesting last week. So you're so boring.
Did I talk about the teacher shortage?
Yeah, you talked about the teacher shortage. Yeah.
Ah, man.
This is what happens when you get old. Your brain turns to rot.
Your brain just turns to rot.
I'll talk about mine, and you can think about something else, all right?
I'll just think of one.
I'm talking about a TV show I've been watching for, like a month or two now. My partner got me into it, and normally this is not something I would watch. It is a show called Steven Universe, which is an animated show, and it is an animated show for children, right? It is a children's animated show. My partner is an adult. I am an adult. And yet for some reason, she's really into this show. And I started watching it and I was like, this seems like any other children's cartoon that you would watch. No big deal, you know. But the more you watch it, the more you realize that, no, they have created this very intricate and large universe that this story is taking place in. It's almost like a Greek epic, like the Iliad or the Odyssey, told as a children's cartoon. It's like the story of this alien race of people who are came to Earth many years ago, and then a war took place, and it's just a very intricate thing for like a children's cartoon, you know, but it's got great themes for kids too, but adults. So if you have kids, this is what I would recommend you show to them, because you can get into it as an adult too. I am totally hooked on this show. It's got the great themes for kids about like a friendship and acceptance and things like that. But it's also just a really awesome story about, you know, this world light years from here. And it's a really great story. I highly recommend you watch it. It might take the episodes are only like 12 minutes long or something like that. They're really, really short. But there's lots of them. Like there are 50 episodes in a season or something like that. And so, yeah, give it a watch. Eventually, you will get hooked, I promise. Just give it time to start unfolding the larger story of what's taking place, because there's a lot that's like initially unknown that you find out many, many episodes later. Okay, so please give it a watch. The writers on it, extremely sophisticated writing. I highly, highly recommend it.
I want you to do me a favor, okay? Lay off the marijuanas, okay? All right. Just lay off the marijuana.
I'll tell you what. Right? The people who write this show clearly do not lay off the marijuana. Because there is some really trippy stuff in this show, okay? But it's entirely kid-friendly. It is amazing stuff.
Real kid-friendly.
I highly recommend.
It is. Yeah. Okay. I think I actually tried watching it one time. I didn't like it. So I'm going to talk about because you squashed on repeating my one from last week.
We're giving the people fresh content here. Fresh content.
I want to talk about the Kansas City Star editorial page because there was a big dust up this week on the Kansas City Star editorial page. And you know what it made me do? I canceled my subscription to the Kansas City Star. I did.
Yes.
But I mean, it was something I meant to do a while ago, but then to this week when they published a letter to the editor, calling Patrick Mahomes, like basically saying that he's vain and that he just cares about how he looks and not whether he wins or loses, which is the most biggest bag of ridiculous garbage I've ever heard in my life. But it reminds me that 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, it might be a month ago now, I don't know, that the Star printed an editorial piece about how teachers were ideologues brainwashing children. Public school teachers were brainwashing children, and it was all the fault of woke educators. And this was just after they had published a piece on teacher shortage. So it made me go, well, one of the things I'm not sure everybody understands as I listen to the back and forth over this new Patrick Mahomes article. One, I did not hear near the uproar for the teachers are brainwashing children editorial piece that I did for the Patrick Mahomes one. I wish we had. But I understand that there's not going to be as many people who know what's going on in the education space. But like what I want people to understand is that editorial boards are not connected to the news side of newspapers. So they're usually completely independent. Okay. But that does not relinquish the responsibility of an editorial board for publishing garbage like this. Okay. That newspaper, and let's be honest, we all know why they do these things. They do them for clicks. They do them because they think it's going to drum up interest. It's going to make people mad and they're going to talk about it and it's going to make them more money. But I mean, I'm sure the Star's not thinking that what they did was a smart thing this week, but you know, we have to get away from that stuff. Editorial boards are important. You know, they should have journalistic standards as well. I talk to my students every year about journalistic standards and things like that. And I'm not sure that the Kansas City Star opinion section and the editorial board is living up to a journalistic standard that anybody would promote. And so that's kind of my call. I still think that the Kansas City Star news side does some great things, some great investigation stuff. You know, they were the ones, a lot of them, that pushed for the investigation of that detective in Kansas who had been sexually abusing informants for years and years and years. The Star helped uncover that. They've done some fantastic things news-wise, but that is an egregious – what the opinion section has become is an egregious problem. And so, yeah, hopefully the Star takes a hard look at their opinion section and their editorial board, because it's not a good thing right now.
Yeah. You hit it right on the head with, we've come to a place in a lot of media that the Star isn't the only one that does this. The Wall Street Journal does it too. And it's garbage, where they're like, our editorial board gets to do whatever it wants. No standards whatsoever. All their job is to do is to like drum up interest, to drum up outrage among the audience, to get people to click on our stories and that sort of thing. It drives me insane. Like that I read that woke educators garbage, and I wouldn't have let that run in my college newspaper. It is such garbage. I don't understand that just because it's written by a politician, we have to put it in the newspaper. Just because it's written by, you know, someone, we have to, you don't have to put a this stuff in there.
Political commentator?
No,
come on.
Get it out of there. What is
you
that?
And I are political commentators, if we want to be.
We all are. This is the internet.
Political commentator.
This is the internet age. People, wake up. Like, it drives me crazy to not have any sort of standards that are like, did anybody fact check this editorial? Did anybody like make sure that the claims are supported with evidence? No, we didn't do that. And what's funny is none of these are time sensitive either. Like, you could run these next week, take the week to like actually read it and you know, look at its claims and look for evidence. Like,
how about logic? Do we ever just stop and go, is this logical?
What's no. the okay. Hard truth of journalism and journalism schools is they actually don't train you in those things for journalism and journalism schools. I know, I have a degree in journalism. I went to journalism school. They don't actually train you to know how to make an argument, to know how to evaluate an argument, to know how to like the rules of, you know, logic and fallacies and things like that. They just train you in like writing particular genres. Like, this is a hard news story. This is a feature story. This is how you ask questions and that sort of stuff, which is great. But they also need to, if you're planning on being a member of an editorial board, if you plan on, you need to understand these things in order to evaluate the pieces that are going to run on your opinion section. If not, you end up like the Wall Street Journal, which publishes nonstop garbage in its editorial section on its editorial page, or like the Kansas City Star right now, which is running seemingly really, really fallacious arguments on their editorial page.
Yeah, it was how you could look at something like that and not think like, and the questions people were raising were completely apt and perfect. Has and did it mention the work that they've done in the community, let alone the fact that the guy has already won a Super Bowl? The only thing you need to know that this is not logically correct, he's played 4 AFC championship games and won a Super Bowl and played in 2. He doesn't want to win? I'm sorry, what? All he's done is win.
He's also the winningest quarterback in his four or five years of anybody all time.
Ever. Like, but, ever. All he cares about is looking good. All he does is win.
All he does is win. Exactly. We have too much time on our hands if we're coming up with arguments like this. It's ridiculous.
I know, man.
Just ridiculous. Jeez. This is the stuff that makes me want to like move to southern Portugal and just retire in the woods somewhere, you know, like but anyway, I digress. Don't worry. I'll be here next week. To make at least for one more week, I'll be here to record an episode of Royals Weekly for you all. We'll be back to talk about the final three games, and then we're going to move to once monthly, like we do in the off season. We'll move to once monthly episodes, but we'll be back next week talking about these final three games. Until then, be good to each other
and go Royals.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.